Chapter 40. Hank didn't know how long he'd slept or why he'd woken up. The depth of Jolie's snores signaled that it was the middle of the night. He went out into the kitchen, found his cigarettes. He really didn't mind being awake. The idea that there was nothing for him to feel guilty about not doing comforted him. About halfway through his cigarette, the notion of this baby thing, that it was a desperate kind of sham that could wind up getting somebody killed, gripped him. It was too bad, too. He'd felt healthier with her in the last few days, since at the beginning. The question was how to tell Jolie that he didn't want to go through with it. For courage, he told himself that she would be just as relieved as he was, but he didn't believe it. The quandary of his new worry was like nausea inside him. As surely as if it had been playing in the room, he heard the line from the song, "Did you ever have to finally decide?" echo in his mind. In the morning it would be Thanksgiving, and they were having dinner with his parents. That was depressing enough in itself. But suppose Jolie told his parents they were trying to make a baby. Little Hank running around. He grinned at the way their faces would look when they heard it. But the humor didn't last. If she told them, it would almost be like it had already happened. It would be something else that would forever follow him. Hank made his way back to bed and fell asleep. He woke up a few hours later to the slippery, steady rhythm of Jolie's mouth as it slid up and down his cock. Her hair was touching his balls and thighs like an elegant feather duster that was taking away the cobwebs. "I want to suck your cock all day," she said when she saw that he was awake. "Just let me know when you're going to shoot so I can get it in between my legs." Hank was speechless. "How many times do you think you could pop off if you let me suck it as much as I want?" "I don't know," he said. The words came out of him like billiard balls rolling across green felt, bouncing softly everywhere and not colliding in back of his closed eyes. The horn section's first resounding blast as the band had its last warm-up for halftime of the game jolted Ron awake. He felt like he was being brought back from the dead for some unnecessary reason. He listened to the theme of On Wisconsin with a deep frown. The day wasn't going to be bad enough. It had to start like this. He staggered through the door, scratching his crotch. "Look who decided to roll out of bed," said Marjorie, who was already dressed and in high gear. Ron blinked and scratched as Aunt Dottie glared at the sight of him, standing in his underwear in the kitchen, scratching himself to boot. "You're a fine sight," she said, nodding methodically. Ron was now reeling from the aromas of the kitchen that gave smells that said to his body that it was dinner time. "Is there any coffee?" "You can't make a mess in the kitchen now," said Marjorie. "Isn't there any coffee?" said Ron with a desperate, panting look. "Yes, there's coffee," she said, smiling and moving toward the electric urn she used on holidays. Aunt Dottie waited until she figured enough time had passed for him to not know it was coming. "Do you always walk around scratching yourself like that?" "What?" Aunt Dottie got out of her chair and stood in the center of the kitchen. "I mean," she said dramatically, "that you come out of the bedroom scratching yourself all the time." She backed up in front of Ron's door, yawned, staggered, and scratched herself between her legs with long, exaggerated motions. Ron flinched at the image. Marjorie was laughing hysterically, and Aunt Dottie joined her. She dragged herself across the room, continuing to scratch her crotch. Ron wanted to disappear badly. "Give me a break, Aunt Dot. I gotta entertain the clergy today." "Don't scratch in the middle of dinner," said Aunt Dottie. "I won't, if you don't let on that maybe you're becoming a little senile." "Senile?" Dottie raised herself into a full battle posture and glared. "You slovenly slug. At least I don't come out of my room scratching myself like this." She returned to their imitation. Marjorie laughed harder this time. "You win," he said, trying to skirt around her as he headed back for his room. Aunt Dottie exchanged a smile with Marjorie. They'd spent plenty of time moaning about how he acted when he first got up. "The last thing I need is to have him in a bad mood today," said Marjorie. "Don't worry about it. He'll be fine. Besides, I have some money to give him for the holiday." They smiled again. It didn't take much to buy Ron's forgiveness. Jolie and Hank were in the car on the way to his parents' house. She was toying with her curls and whispering in her ear, "Anytime you want, I'll just take your cock out, get on my knees, and suck it for as long as you want. I'm going to be thinking about doing it all day, Hank." Hank smiled. He knew he must be in the eye of some hurricane that would burst its fury on him at any second. But he heard himself say, "Do it now," as the trusty VW made its way to the turkey dinner. "This fucking sucks," thought Ron, as he set the table for dinner. Here he was, without a real girlfriend, wasting his time talking to a minister and his brood. He knew how dinner would go. He would eat too much. There would be no way not to eat too much. Everything would taste really good. Even if you passed up all but your favorites, you spent the rest of the day trying to get comfortable with your bulk. Willard Mueller and his family were a group of five. His wife and he were tall, very tall, wore glasses. Their three children were adopted. The twins, girls of 14, that the Muellers had taken off of the hands of the court, were the latest additions. Shannon had been adopted as an infant and was now almost 8 years old. The Muellers hadn't told her or anyone else that they met up north that she wasn't their natural child. They arrived a festive 10 minutes late. The adults, with whom Ron was uncomfortably included, had a drink. George was always happy when he was serving alcohol. Ron figured it was a holdover from his days as a bartender. Mr. Mueller announced that they didn't usually drink, but would join them in the honor of occasion. Mrs. Mueller reminded her husband in the presence of the children, and Willard reassessed the situation. They would join George in a glass of cider to toast the holiday. George became instantly glum and turned to Ron with a sense of desperation. "Do you want anything?" "I'll have some wine," said Ron. Dottie made her entrance about 15 minutes after the Muellers arrived. She was dressed totally in black and wearing nothing for contrast but diamonds. Her hair was tinted silver, and even her glasses had diamond chips in the frames. She told George she would have a rum and coke. He rubbed his hands together and scurried off to pick up some ice. "Before we begin to eat," said Marjorie, addressing herself to Willard, "I would just like you to tell my son how you came to be doing this work with your life." Ron, who had been absently staring at the freckles on the arms of the twins, saw the girls exchange a quick look of disgust. Shannon looked up at the long face of her mother and asked if she could go to the bathroom. "Ask Mrs. Bombasco to show you, dear," said Mina Mueller. The twins giggled. Ron wondered how his mother developed her ability to embarrass other people. "It's not that I'm trying to put you to work," she said to Willard. "It's just that I think we can all profit from hearing about your experience and knowing that the world is still a place where miracles can occur." Ron lost his appetite immediately as he found himself reaching for his cigarettes. He saw his aunt doing the same thing, wondered why his mother was always setting him up this way. Sensing some reluctance on the part of the Muellers, Marjorie added, "Perhaps after we've eaten." Willard did agree to say grace. Ron was waiting and hoping for some small reference to the fact on this day of Thanksgiving we were slaughtering people on the other side of the world, but there was none. "We thank thee for this beautifully prepared bird," said Willard. Mina kept her eyes on her plate and gave a small Christian smile. Marjorie said, Thank God, amen. George was unable to contain himself and laughed at Marjorie. Ron made the sign of a cross to piss off Aunt Dottie and to distance himself from the rest of the people at the table. Ron's last Protestant minister had been Reverend Waldo. Ron was always bored when he and his mother went to church. He would count the number of people there as Waldo gave his sermon. He remembered how he hated to face his great-grandmother, Aunt Dottie's mother, when he came home. At the end, she was always in bed, turned toward the wall, on her side, or on her back, staring at the ceiling. She and Ron slept in the same room, and it used to scare him to hear her breathe at night. "Did you go to Sunday school, Ron?" "We got there too late, Grandma." A sweep of pain crossed the old woman's face. "There were only 58 people in church today, Grandma." "Why did you count the people?" "I couldn't understand what the minister was saying." Her foreskin wrinkled, but her mouth remained soft. "If you listened, Jesus would help you to understand, Ron." "He doesn't talk loud enough for me to hear him, Grandma." "I'm tired now," she said. "I'm going to take a little rest." Only 58 people. When she was a little girl and her father was preaching, they used to line the walls, and afterward, everyone stayed and talked, shook hands. Willard Mueller wasn't wearing his minister's clothes. He seemed reluctant to talk, but Ron sensed that he was just hanging back, waiting for the best time to strike. Marjorie asked him again to tell the story to her family, the story of how he found Christ. She even started it for him. "It began with your secretary coming in and announcing that you'd just become a millionaire." Ron fixed his eyes on Mueller. "I was a lawyer practicing in Alabama. Before I quit, I suppose I was actually closer to $5 million. But I had an ulcer and high blood pressure. I found myself delivering speeches at organized meetings of the Ku Klux Klan. My wife and I were talking about divorce because we were both so well aware of our marital infidelities. But instead of getting a divorce, we decided to take a good hard look at our lives from the perspective of our Christian morality. None of us liked what we saw, and it was time for action. The time for blaming and complaining was over. It was very hard to decide to give most of the money away, but it was a lot of fun to do it. That was 7 years ago, and here we are. Hank and Jolie ate without speaking. Hank's mother had tried preparing the turkey with it that she'd seen advertised with chicken in a magazine. Jolie forked the meat with bewilderment. Hank's father was already two sheets to the wind and announced that it was delicious without eating any. Hank looked down at the mess of bird tinged with red drippings and thought it looked disgustingly fresh killed. He never understood why his mother insisted on taking perfectly good food and ruining it. No one asked for seconds, and about 20 minutes after the mess had been spread across the table, it was mercifully removed. At that point, all four of them began drinking. Hank felt the alcohol curl around his brain and watched the way his father leered at Jolie. He thought smugly that this was the finest piece of ass his old man had ever come in contact with. He appreciated the way Jolie was putting up with his father. She would smile and let the old man touch her shoulders and arms. Then the old boy blurted, "Have you, Hank, gotten around to any serious baby-making yet?" "That's a terrible thing to say," said Hank's mother, squirming one of her most uncomfortable squirms. "What's wrong with it? They're married. Hank does know how he got here, doesn't he? You do know how you got here, don't you, Hank?" "It's not the kind of thing I want talked about at my table. And certainly it's not the kind of thing I want talked about on Thanksgiving." She took a long swallow out of her drink and let her eyes down with the glass. "Someone's got to give thanks for it," said Hank's father. Jolie giggled, and Hank's mother looked up at him sharply. This was it. The old broad hated her, and Jolie knew she was going to have to fight off at least one attack today. There was a long pause, at the end of which Hank's mother said nothing. She stared at them all for what seemed like minutes and remarked cheerfully, "I'd better get started on my pies." Hank's father squeezed Jolie's arm and looked at Hank with a nod of approval before they got up to help with the pies. "They're weird," whispered Jolie. "They sure are," said Hank. Marjorie brought out apple, pumpkin, and mince pies. She added a bowl of whipped cream and two coffee pots worth of coffee. Dinner conversation had been amiable and centered mostly on the food in New England, where both Dottie and Minya had raised. "Aunt Dot must be feeling good," thought Ron, as he watched her eat almost everything on her second plate. Ron eyed the twins a few times, and they were obviously interested in him, but the whole thing was just too weird. They were 14 and probably had trench mouth or something. Ron wasn't actually sure what trench mouth was, but he assumed it was something you caught when your breath smelled like you'd been caught in a trench for a long time. "I understand that you're in college," said Willard. "It's a small commuter school." Ron tried to think of something that would keep the conversation going. "So, how do you feel about Vietnam?" he said abruptly. "That does seem to be a topic on everyone's mind," said Willard. There have always been wars, Ron. It's a sad fact, but it is nonetheless true. Do you think that they're all as crooked as this one is? The ones that were unpopular were thought of as such. I think, however, that the conscience of the country is being tested. Ron was exasperated almost immediately. This guy wanted to talk about abstract morals and ethics. These people all ended up the same way, doing nothing for any number of good reasons. I think the soul of the country has been stolen myself. I think you're a bunch of spoiled babies, said George. The remark was unexpected. It was one of the first things George had said. It didn't have to do with people drinking. It threw off the rhythm of the exchange, and Marjorie was giving George dirty looks. I'm sure that for a man who has served his time proudly, it must feel that way, said Willard. Yeah. Tell me, what sense it makes to equate babiness with a desire to not kill people who want the same things out of life that I do, interjected Ron. George was silent. It seems, Willard started, that this is the test of conscience to which I was referring. The people who feel that they've done their duty and the people who feel that it is their duty to say no. Marjorie bobbed her head in assent. Wasn't good enough for Ron. It's not that we're just saying no. We're trying to find better answers to things, including religion. He felt like he'd thrown back things at Willard. He knew the guy was never really answered him about how he felt. It was an old minister's trick to make everybody think that he was agreeing with them. A lot of what you say is really silly, said Marjorie. Like that guy you talk about all the time. She paused. Abby Hoffman. Before him it was Bob Dylan. You make it sound like we're talking about Bing Crosby and Patti Page. These are important people. It's not the same as how much is that doggy in the window. There's no need to get nasty, said Marjorie, with a mother's threat in her voice that irritated Ron to the point where he wanted to scream or do something else that would drive the discomfort away. He settled for lighting a cigarette. It's usually when I make a good point that you accuse me of being nasty. Mina Mueller turned her head and patted the hand next to her of Aunt Dottie, whom she had learned had cancer. Aunt Dottie sneered at her. I always swore that I would never want a son of mine to go. I'd tell him to get out of the country before I'd want to see them take him. I agree with you, said Mrs. Mueller, in her small, unremembered act of kindness for the day. Dottie wondered if she could get away spitting at her and blaming it on her throat. Twins asked if they could go for a walk. There was uneasiness among the Muellers before they said yes. Shannon looked as if she wanted to stay behind and listen. Muna hugged her. Ron liked the twins more as they left. After they were safely out of earshot, Muna confided to the group, things are still very much on a day-to-day basis. Willard cleared his throat and looked down to Shannon. Mina reacted like she'd forgotten about the presence of their youngest. It's day-to-day living with Jesus in your heart that's really important, she said. Shannon seemed oblivious to it all. Hank, your mother and I have a little something for the two of you. His father put his arm on his mother's shoulder and squeezed a clump of puffy flesh. His mother squirmed. Since you've gotten married and you're going to start working, the truth is that you've never really had a wedding at all. You're going to need a nest egg, Hank. Your mom and I would like to start you off with $500. Hank stared at him. They were obviously waiting for some reaction. "It's really nice that you would do that for us." "We don't want you to want for anything, Hank," said his mother. And chances are, his father went on with a sense of slurred joviality in his voice, that advancements could come pretty quickly for you at work. That might not mean much now, but when the eagle comes around, you'll be glad this stuff lands on you. Jolie smiled at Hank's mother. She didn't return the smile. Before they left, Hank's father pulled him off to the side and slipped him another $100. "It's always good to have some money the wife doesn't know about. Save the egg from getting cracked once in a while." "I'll try not to let it crack right away," said Hank.